And today I'm with William Campbell from the Here's How podcast. William, I've been listening to your podcast for a long, long time there, and they've a good mix of politics and current affairs and interviews, etc. I'm going to introduce my own listeners to one of your recent podcasts. Why are you picking this one, and why do you think it's a good sample of what you do?
It's not recent, actually. It's from about 6 years ago, and the reason I picked it was I put a question out on Twitter and people came back with some different suggestions, but this one was really high in the mix, and also quite a few people messaged me directly then saying they didn't want to say in public that I should put this out, but that this was the one I should do. It's about RTE, and it interviews a guy who was a presenter, I think, on Morning Ireland, and is now a news manager, is sort of in management, in editorial in RTE. And usually I try to be polite and friendly with interviewees, but once in a while, when you ask the tough questions, people get a bit tetchy. This is a bit tetchy. I hope it's not too uncomfortable listening, but I can see that years later people are still remembering that podcast. I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult, that people, when I ask what's the best one I should give out, that people give me one that I did 6 years ago, but that's what was recommended.
Excellent. Okay, well, we're going to play that now and ask people to enjoy it and to look out for your future podcasts and to check you out, which platforms you're on and what's the best way to get through to you.
You can get it on anywhere you search for podcasts. If you just search for Here's How Ireland, you'll get it. And also, if you just go to hereshow.ie, there's a bunch of links for any podcast platform you can click through and subscribe.
Excellent. So here's his podcast from 5-6 years ago.
This is Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, presented by William Campbell.
Thank you for downloading episode 41 of Here's How. RTE is the dominant force in broadcasting in Ireland. It is the main source of news and current affairs for many Irish people, and it depends on both a TV licence fee and advertising revenue. In this podcast, I ask a senior news editor how well it's doing its job.
Here's How is Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast. Make your view heard. Just dial 076-603-5060 and tell the world what you're thinking. Your voicemail may be included in the next podcast. You can find tips on recording your contribution and other ways to contact the show at hereshow.ie/call.
The Irish national broadcaster is RTE. RTE receives about a third of a billion euro each year, roughly half each from advertising and the €160 licence fee that each household must pay if they have a TV, regardless of whether they actually watch RTE television. The money is spent on RTE's TV, radio and web services, which include music, sport, drama and entertainment. But I'm particularly interested in RTE's news and current affairs output. And on the line is the RTE news editor, Donal Byrne. He's also in charge of forward planning with RTE News. Donal, my belief is that because of its dominant position in Irish broadcasting and also because of the licence fee, RTE obviously has to be impartial and truthful and represent all standards, all strands of society. But I think they also have a duty to Irish democracy. What is RTE's view on that?
Well, of course we have a duty to Irish democracy. We are the public service broadcaster. We have a far broader remit, perhaps, than other broadcasters. We have a number of constraints on how we operate and how we produce our content that don't necessarily apply to purely commercial outlets. Mm-hmm. We take this responsibility very seriously. Accepting money from the license fee isn't simply a mechanism for us to spend money. In our view, it's a way of investing money in the kind of news and current affairs coverage that people expect and deserve.
Mm-hmm. There's a journalistic standard that a lot of media organisations follow, which is that nothing is reported as fact unless it's confirmed by two independent sources. Does RTE follow that?
Yes, and in many cases more. We, by definition, we deal with many sensitive topics and subjects in our everyday output, which require considerable checking. As you can imagine, in a news organization of this size, and given the prominence that it holds in Irish society as a mechanism, as a method for informing people's opinions on all kinds of issues, not necessarily just political issues, but social, religious, economic, educational, and so on. So we are a broad church, as you pointed out in your introduction, in terms of the kind of output that we have. But we have an ultimate responsibility to our listeners and viewers that supersedes absolutely everything that we do. And one of the key tenets of the way that we operate is that we don't peddle, if you like, for want of a better word, our personal opinions on anything. We have a legal and an editorial responsibility to ensure that our output is trusted by the public. And I think that's borne out in the reaction to various stories and investigations carried out by RTE. There is an expectation of credibility. When you see or hear something on Morning Ireland News at 1, the This Week programme, the 6 o'clock news, the 9 o'clock news, prime time, the investigative programmes, you have to believe that what you're hearing is truthful, is accurate, and is fair. And that is our greatest responsibility.
On there's one particular phrase that I think troubles some people, and I've heard it many, many times on RTE. Maybe you can explain it to me. What does known to Gardaí mean?
Known to Gardaí, I suppose, that isn't just a phrase you hear on RTE. It's common to all media outlets. I'm not sure the context of your question. I mean, if you'd like to give me an example, I could perhaps elaborate.
I genuinely don't know what it is. I mean, like, I know a few of the lads on first name basis in my local station. If you reported about me, would I be known to Gardaí?
I really don't get the point of the question. I mean, it would depend entirely on the context in which we were reporting on you or your activities. Mm-hmm. Known to Gardaí is perhaps a pejorative phrase. It's something we're careful about using. Mm-hmm. But, for example, it has been used widely in the media as a code for people who have criminal intent, for example. But that's not a judgment call that we make. It is something that we occasionally will refer to in order that we can inform people that the person we are talking about, we may have, for example, information that we are privy to that might suggest that people should be aware, for example, in the case of a missing child or a case of paedophilia or whatever, instead of saying Gardaí are looking for a person, if the Gardaí chose to share information with us, to suggest that this was a particularly dangerous person, perhaps we won't use that phrase.
Sure. I think, in fairness, that phrase is usually used about people who are dead for one reason or another. But it strikes me, and the reason I think it might be problematic, is that it seems like innuendo. It seems like saying the person is a criminal without quite saying it.
Actually, William, we're not in the business of innuendo.
But you can see how it's not.
Well, again, if you'd like to give me examples of when and where this was used, I would certainly contextualise them for you.
Sure. Well, one good example of when it was used, Derek O'Toole was killed when he was hit by a guard car in March 2007. And he, I think, died at 7:30 in the morning. And within hours of his death, he was described on RTE as known to Gardaí. It later transpired there was a GSOC investigation into that. He had no criminal associations whatsoever. He was an upstanding citizen. Is it possible that when something like that happens, RTE is not relying on multiple independent sources, that you're leaving yourself open maybe to being used by the Gardaí to, when they want to blacken someone's name, they want to get a dig in before they get criticised?
William, I have to emphatically reject any agenda on our part. You're talking about a case which is 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with the particular case, so I really can't elaborate on it.
Okay. But you can see that if RTE were to broadcast to say that someone, I mean, you could say that somebody has X, Y, and Z convictions, or you could just more vaguely say they have criminal convictions, if you were aware of that. But you can see how and there have been, you know, many difficulties with the way the Gardaí have been operating, that it's open to them to let you know on the QT, this guy's a wrong one. And it sort of gives the impression that this is somebody who, you know, polite society don't really need to worry if they're dead.
William, we don't accept things on face value from any one particular source, and we inform ourselves as broadly as we possibly can. We have very clear editorial guidelines, and we apply those guidelines across the board equally and fairly. So it really doesn't matter whether you are someone whose name has been blackened by a particular party, or whether you're the Taoiseach or a member of the Cabinet or a member of the Oireachtas. We apply the same standards fairly to everyone. Okay. And I don't think we're found short in that respect.
Well, GSOC certainly found both RT and, I should say, other media outlets as well short in that.
I think, in fairness, if you wanted to raise a case which is now 9 years old and with which I personally am not familiar, perhaps you could have given me some notice and we could have been perhaps a bit more constructive or elaborate more than I can at the moment.
Sure. I'm really giving that as an example and more. And I did.
Well, you're using a very specific example. I'm quite happy, by the way, to address any specific example that you have. In this case, I'm not familiar with the case.
Okay, I am more interested in the principle. And in the RT journalism guidelines that I got on your website, it says we should be reluctant to rely on a single source, especially if the information from that source has been given on condition of anonymity. And what I'm really looking for you is, when I hear something in the news, what does it mean? When, for example, I hear on the news somebody was well known to Gardaí, is it possible that that's coming from multiple sources or maybe just from one Garda source?
It's probably entirely likely that it's coming from multiple sources.
Okay. That's something that I think listeners are interested in knowing.
And I think at one point, if I could make the point, William, is that, as I said, we apply our standards fairly. Mm-hmm. We seek to establish the truth in every case because that is the ultimate responsibility we have to listeners and viewers. We do deal on a daily basis with all kinds of information, with all kinds of innuendo, with all kinds of suggestions, with all kinds of attempts by people to blacken other people's names. If we were to simply accept as fact based on one source anything that was said about an individual, I think we would have a serious credibility issue.
I should say, and I appreciate that it's not fair on you to expect you to have details at your fingertips of a single case or even several cases that may have happened some years ago. Although I do, and I'll put examples in the show notes on the website for this, I do have other examples of cases where people had that said about them and who had no criminal associations. But there's been a wide range of comment, particularly on social media, about Paul Reynolds, and he's certainly had, outside of RT, negative comment about his level of independence from the Gardaí. Paul Reynolds is RT's main crime reporter. He has strong family links to the Gardaí. His father was a senior member of the Gardaí, was a detective superintendent. Do you feel that his reporting and his prominence in crime reporting is at a sufficient arm's length from the Gardaí?
Firstly, William, I have an issue with identifying Paul Reynolds' family as being, it seems to me you're suggesting that there is a pro-Garda factor at work here.
I'm sure you're aware I'm not the only one.
Paul Reynolds has been for many years an outstanding crime reporter and whose work seldom has ever been called into question. He deals every day with quite extraordinary stories that reflect the nature of what's happening in our society under huge pressure. And he's one of the people, he's just an example of the kind of journalist and the kind of journalism that we produce that is fair. And his job is to see both sides. And he will be found out very quickly if he doesn't. Because we have people, rightly, who watch our output, rightly who are critical of our output, rightly who are questioning the kind of information that we put out. But we put it out in the context of what we believe to be true, fair and accurate. And I really, in Paul Reynolds' absence, I would have to defend his record and his credibility. And I find references to his family or unnamed sources who say that he's too close to the Gardaí.
The sources are absolutely named. For example, John Collins TD was excoriating him on Twitter.
Well, everyone's entitled to criticise output. We have it all the time. It's not just Paul Reynolds. Every single one of our correspondents comes under fire, as we do. We work in a difficult environment where we strive for integrity, objectivity and fairness. Mm-hmm. And we invite criticism, of course, as long as it's fair.
Mm-hmm. I want to be absolutely fair.
I'm not getting into the middle of an argument between John Collins and Paul Reynolds on social media. Frankly, that has its place. But our place is to defend our editorial record.
Obviously, as you say, it's the job of journalists to get out information that other people don't have. Would you accept that RTE has had maybe more success in getting information that might be said to be from the Garda side of the table than from sources that might be critical of the Garda?
I've read many stories in newspapers and various outlets and on social media that weren't even carried on RTE. So I really have no idea. The point of the question as to whether Gardaí choose or are selective in who they release their information to, I really have no idea what their motivation is for this, if that is the case. If that is the case. And mm-hmm. it's possible that the answer may be as simple as the fact that RTE reaches the widest audience.
Yeah, so
if there is important information to be gotten out there, they may choose RTE first or they may not.
That's absolutely possible, but I'm thinking, for example, that Paul Reynolds and RTE in general were very able to very quickly give reports about the attitude of Noreen O'Sullivan, sort of sources close to Noreen O'Sullivan type reports about her attitude to Maurice McCabe, but the actual text that showed that she hadn't been entirely truthful came through a different source, came through the Irish Examiner.
But that's the way the media works. Mm-hmm. I would expect it's part of Paul Reynolds' job to reflect the views of the Gardaí and Sergeant McCabe and any other interested parties or people who had relevant information at the time. His job is to get it. It's impossible to get it all sometimes. But, you know, you have to look at this in an aggregated sense as well. What we don't have at 1 minute to 11, we may have at 1 minute to 12. So we look at our coverage in the round.
Okay, my question then is, are you entirely satisfied that Garda sources sympathetic to Gardaí are equally represented as maybe sources that might be not so sympathetic to them?
We strive for balance, William, and balance is at the heart of every single thing that we do. I mean, we don't just have our own rules and guidelines here. We have mandatory and statutory guidelines. So if anybody has an issue, there are several outlets and forums available to them to raise complaints and complaints which are dealt with on a regular basis here.
Okay, well, let me change the topic then slightly. Gemma O'Doherty was a journalist who was fired from the Irish Independent after 17 years as a reporter because she investigated corruption in penalty points and particularly how that corruption benefited the then Garda Commissioner Martin Callanan. Would you agree that a multi-award-winning journalist being fired for doing her job, that's a story of national importance, isn't it?
I'm not clear about the circumstances of Gemma O'Doherty's resignation or firing, as you describe it. Mm-hmm. So I really am not qualified to answer that question. I don't know what exactly the issues were.
Well, she won a large award both in the High Court and the Employment Tribunals, the Employment Appeals Tribunal from the Independent Group. But nevertheless, I mean, the story was that there was clearly a connection with the work she was doing, which wasn't smiled upon by management in the Independent Group, and she was forced out of her job. You don't agree?
I didn't say I disagreed, but that's your understanding of it.
Okay.
I'm having a slight difficulty following the question here. Are you saying that we didn't cover the story?
I'm saying there was virtually a news blackout in RTE on that story.
Okay, a virtual news blackout. So can you specify exactly what was carried and what wasn't carried?
Absolutely.
I'm happy to look into this for you, William.
Absolutely. I can give you facts and figures right now.
Certainly not my memory that there was an entire news blackout on it.
Well, to give you facts and figures, if you search the name Gemma O'Doherty on the RTE website, it returns 17 pages with her name. About half a dozen of them are not connected, or just when she was mentioned in relation to other stories. There are 11 mentions of her on the RTE website in connection to the story of her being fired. They're mostly quite short reports, just stating what went on at the Employment Appeals Tribunal. The Guardian, which is a British newspaper, the same search of their website gives 65 hits. There's major profiles of Gemma O'Doherty and in-depth reporting that just didn't happen on RTE. If a British newspaper is that interested, why is RTE not interested?
Well, first of all, you're saying RTE isn't interested, and your issue is with the number of listings for Gemma O'Doherty. Pardon?
That's a handy metric.
It's a handy metric, yes. I mean, The Guardian may choose, for example, to pursue other lines of editorial inquiry than RTE. But to say that RTE ignored the story or didn't report it is simply not true, as you can see from your figures.
Well, it's true that it appeared in a very perfunctory way a couple of times, but it is...
But are you saying perfunctory or a couple of times or seven times or eight times?
There are a total of 11 pages that mention that story. They're mostly quite short stories, and they are mostly just setting out the positions that were stated either for the High Court or the Employment Appeals Tribunal case.
So in other words, both sides of the story were carried?
Well, I would have thought that a prominent award-winning journalist being fired for investigating corruption benefiting
As I understand it, the terms of the settlement of the Gemma O'Doherty case were confidential on both sides. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, it is correct.
So perhaps we were not in a position
to establish what those facts were.
Nevertheless,
and which I refer back to my original point that not being able or being handicapped in some way in establishing full facts is a major issue for us.
But you accept that the Guardian covered in vastly more depth.
I haven't seen the Guardian coverage, actually. I remember stories in the Guardian at the time, but I haven't seen the full and comprehensive list.
Okay. Personally, I would have thought that would have been the stuff of sit-down interviews with Gemma O'Doherty, of primetime specials and so forth, not short stories on the website and a two-minute item on the news.
Again, I refer you back to the fact that if we didn't have the facts because of a confidential agreement reached between two parties in the High Court, in some cases, and possibly in this case, the issue itself became slightly more impenetrable for us than perhaps for The Guardian. So perhaps people decided that they wouldn't be bound by that confidential agreement in the High Court and decided to provide details, because I have no idea whether those details are even accurate.
Well, a large chunk of the reporting happened long before the High Court case was settled.
So the High Court case was settled. Again, I wasn't privy to it, and I don't think very many people were, and the terms of the settlement were not disclosed. So I find the picture slightly incomplete, William, without the terms of the settlement.
Sure, but The Guardian has a large body of work reporting on this story that is dated before the settlement.
I accept what you're saying.
Okay. Let me move on to one other thing then. What is AA Road Watch?
What is AA Road Watch?
Uh-huh.
AA Road Watch, my understanding is it's a service that provides traffic information on radio.
Sure. RT obviously broadcasts programs, be they in-house or commissioned from independent producers. You can hear advertisements. You can hear sponsored programs. Which one of those is AA Road Watch?
My understanding is, and by the way, this is not any part of News and Current Affairs, that it's an arrangement between RTE and the AA, but I have no idea what the terms of that agreement are.
Okay, I've got up the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland's definition of sponsorship, and sponsorship is, according to the BAI, any contribution made by a public or private undertaking to the financing of television or radio programs with a view to promoting its name, its trademark, its image, its activities, its products, or its services. Am I correct in thinking that when I turn on Morning Ireland or whatever program that has a Road Watch on it, the person who's reading out that traffic news, that person's salary is paid by the AA, is that correct?
I'm afraid I have no idea, but I would assume so.
Okay, and they're not in Montrose. They're located in a studio in the AA building in the Dublin City Centre, and the AA is paying the rent on that studio.
I really have no idea about what their commercial arrangements are.
Okay, as I understand it, that that is correct. And that does seem very clearly to meet the definition of sponsorship, doesn't it?
I think that's something you'd need to address with RTE corporately. It certainly doesn't apply in News and Current Affairs. Okay. It is an insert into a News and Current Affairs programme, but it's not something which is part of the editorial process on Morning Ireland.
On first face, you would have to say that that does appear to meet the criteria of being a sponsored programme.
I really have no idea what the terms of the agreement are with the AA, so I'm afraid I can't elaborate on that.
Okay. In the past, programmes like Morning Ireland and other news programmes have actually used the AA studios that are normally used for AA Roadwatch, have used those for guests being interviewed as well. Do you still do that?
I would imagine when facilities are required in the centre of town that we would have access still to the AA studio. But that's merely a facility.
The AA has, by the way, 160 broadcasts per week on RTE, and the listeners are obviously directed to the AA website where the AA sells insurance and also where they run various political campaigns promoting the interests of the motor industry. Do you find that in any way problematic that a campaign group has such access even only to promote its own name, but obviously the what they are talking about has profound implications for the political campaigns that they run.
The political campaigns?
Yes.
My understanding is that there is an agreement, a commercial arrangement between RTE and AA Roadwatch. I really have no idea what the terms of that agreement are. I've said this, and at the risk of repeating myself, unless and until I could see what the terms and conditions were. And this really is an issue outside News and Current Affairs, so perhaps it might be addressed to RTE corporately.
AA Roadwatch inserts, though, do appear fairly seamlessly in News and Current Affairs programmes, and also AA Roadwatch, if you do a search of the Dáil speeches, you find that AA Roadwatch is very frequently brought up by backbench TDs as evidence for the need, usually the need for building a bypass or building some other road. From a News and Current Affairs point of view...
Sorry, are you saying that individual politicians or members of the Oireachtas refer to reports on AA Roadwatch as supporting their particular view development or infrastructure?
Exactly, yes.
Well, of course, they're entirely entitled to use that information in whatever way they choose.
Conor Falkland, who comes on RTE with an unbelievable level of frequency, is introduced as Conor Falkland of AA Roadwatch when he's there campaigning against public transport or campaigning for tax breaks for the motor industry or whatever. Do you think that there's enough of a Chinese wall there separating those two things?
I'm at a slight loss to... understand the point about Conor Falkland being identified as a spokesman for the AA with a particular message. But I think if you look carefully again, every contribution, we strive here for balance. So if there is a suggestion or an imputation that Conor Falkland's word is taken as perhaps reflecting some editorial belief in RTE, that's simply not the case. He's as entitled as any other representative of any other body to make his point, if it is valid and newsworthy.
Do you think that the association gives him more credibility that other campaigning groups might than other campaigning groups might have?
What association?
Conor Falkland is frequently introduced on RTE as Conor Falkland of AA Roadwatch.
And the point being?
The point being that...
If my memory serves me correctly, he's identified as Conor Falkland of the AA rather than AA Roadwatch. But again, I'm not going to split hairs on this, but my understanding is that it's usually the AA.
I've frequently heard both. He is sometimes introduced as Conor Falkland of the AA as well.
He is sometimes or all the time. I think this point may be important.
Most certainly, both have occurred regularly.
Okay.
For example, I know that, say, RTE Current Affairs presenters, say, Colm McQuillia from Morning Ireland, if he was offered the chance to voice over an ad saying, buy, this ice cream or that baked beans, he would be prevented by his terms of employment from doing that. Isn't that true?
Clearly.
Because even if he didn't say, I'm Conor Falkland of Morning Ireland, or even if he didn't say, I'm Conor Falkland and you should buy these baked beans, just his voice is enough of an association.
Sorry, are you referring to Colm McQuillia or Conor Falkland?
Excuse me, Colm McQuillia, who's a Morning Ireland presenter. Just his voice would be enough of that product improperly borrowing his credibility as a news presenter. That's the rest, the reasoning behind that, isn't it?
I take your point, yes.
Okay, but you see how somebody who perhaps might take the view that promoting public transport rather than the motor industry was an important political goal, they would see that they're really not on the inside track in the way that Conor Faulkman is.
I don't think, as a point of information, that Conor Faulkman actually broadcasts on AA Roadwatch to begin with. As I said, he is a representative of a body who's entitled to make his point in the same way as other bodies are.
Sure, and that's certainly true, but the level of access that the AA gets is breathtaking, you would agree?
No, I wouldn't, actually.
You don't think...
No, I don't think it's breathtaking at all. Okay. I don't think anybody's contribution on RTE is breathtaking.
I'll leave that aside, but Conor Faulkman has essentially been made a household name. Do you think that there are any other individuals campaigning in the same field of transport, say somebody from the Irish Cycling Campaign or somebody campaigning for an improvement in public transport is a household name?
It's your view he's a household name. He certainly has established himself over many years as a spokesman for the AA, and that's how he is simply regarded within RTE.
I want to change the topic again. RTE, do you think RTE perhaps suffers from a lack of talent? And if you look at, for example, broadcasters in other European countries like Portugal or Spain or Greece, those countries are essentially a single language block, and that means that broadcasters in, say, for example, Portugal don't lose their talent to bigger broadcasters in Spain. Do you think that the closeness of BBC and ITV and Sky means that RTE has a talent drain?
I think, if I follow your question and the logic of it, a talent drain would suggest that there is little or no talent in RTE. I think the straight answer to that question, if there was little or no talent in RTE, I don't think we'd have very many viewers or listeners.
Sure, but for example, in the previous generations, Terry Wogan and Eamon Andrews left to go to Britain. Currently, people like Graham Norton or Darragh Brian, in any other European country, they would, you know, you'd expect they'd be broadcasting on their home country services. But in Ireland, they moved to, I think they both work for BBC.
I mean, I'm not going to explain or legislate for the career choices of Darragh Brian or anyone else who is offered a very good job. My understanding is that the market demands and the market pays. And if you're talented and if you want to live and work elsewhere, it's a pretty fundamental human right.
Okay. The reason I ask is because first of all, I'm sure you don't like the story, but it's a good joke, so I'm going to tell it anyway. Todd Andrews, 50 years ago, became the Director General of RTE, and there's a story that when he moved from CIE, he was asked what the difference between the two was, and he said there are more passengers in RTE. And in fact, Todd Andrews' grandson is David McSavage, has had his own show on RTE. Another of his grandsons, Ryan Tuberty, obviously, and Ryan Tuberty's girlfriend, Evie Hulawan, has had her own show. And I've got a whole list here of people who are related to other people in RTE. I don't necessarily want to list it all out, but it does seem to be strikingly controlled, and perhaps not controlled, but dominated by a few families.
I'm really at a loss with this question, William, I'm afraid. Your Todd Andrews joke sounds like a vaguely amusing 50-year-old joke. If you're suggesting that nepotism exists in RTE to the extent that it's dominated by a few families, it sounds like more a part of a Mario Puzo novel than the reality of working in RTE. And certainly, to impugn someone's contribution to RTE by saying their association with a particular family got them a job in RTE. And my information is that, for example, David McSavage isn't too happy with RTE at the moment, which is the reason he's refusing to pay his licence fee. So embracing in the arms of nepotism someone who clearly in a district court has made his unhappiness with RTE and the way he's been treated by RTE as he perceives it, it seems to me that the question lacks logic.
Okay. Well, for example, Philip Boucher Hayes is the nephew of Miles Duncan. Eileen Dunn is the daughter of Mick Dunn, the GA reporter. Richard Curran, the reporter, is the brother of the Director General, Noel Curran. Colin Murray's sister also works there, Kathleen Murray, his nephew, Colin Murray. Lottie Ryan is the daughter of the late Jerry Ryan. That's quite a long list. Jerry Gogan is the son of Larry Gogan. Lindy Clark is the daughter of John Clark. Damien Collins is the son of Ronan Collins. Anton Savage is the son of Tom Savage. And they're all RT personalities. That's quite striking, isn't it?
I'm not aware of Anton Savage's current contribution. You've mentioned at least one person who is sadly deceased. Mm-hmm. I think you really need to go and check how people, if, for example, they were inspired to go into broadcasting and have found work. But I mean, I found the overall tone of your suggestion that the nepotism you seem to be suggesting existing in RTE is far from my experience.
You do, well, a very clear example in that case is there was a feature on the countrywide programme promoting the dog grooming service of Nancy Creedon. I think there's a lot of those businesses around the country that would, you know, small businesses that would be very grateful for that level of publicity.
I'm afraid I've no idea what reference you're making to a dog grooming program. I didn't see it.
It was a feature on a program that featured, for very little reason other than it didn't seem to have any purpose other than promoting the business of the daughter of a very senior RTE presenter.
But it's clearly your view there was no point to it. But not having seen it and not being aware of the content of the program, I'm afraid I can't elaborate on it.
I'm getting a tone perhaps of a little bit of a hostility from you, and I don't...
No, frankly, William, it's not a tone of hostility. I mean, the reason I'm continuing this interview is in an effort to help you perhaps understand in as much as I can from the news and current affairs perspective. But you're raising a range of corporate issues of which I wasn't aware, stories that are 8, 10, 12, 13 years old, which I wasn't aware.
My overall difficulty, I have to say, with RTE is, you know, could be summed up in the word cozy, that it feels when you listen to RTE News compared to other channels that the and perhaps it's the function of being a small country, but that RTE News seems to have a cozy relationship sometimes with the people that they're reporting on, that people like the AA, who have a very cozy relationship with RTE, get a large amount of publicity. It has been commented also that the level of access of a group like the Iona Institute is vastly in excess of what their numbers would justify. Do you think that RTE really should be employing quite so many children of former presenters? Wouldn't it be better that RTE should be employing people like Gemma O'Doherty, people who are kicking up a fuss?
You're absolutely entirely entitled to your views and opinions, William. Perhaps you believe that. That's absolutely fine with me. I'm not here to suggest that you're wrong. What I am here to suggest is, and to tell you very clearly, if you think life is cozy in news and current affairs, you haven't spent very much time around here. We have a less than cozy relationship with many, many interest groups and pressure groups, and we are constantly under pressure from them, which suggests to me, in my experience as a news editor and as a program editor, that we're getting something right when you're getting equal volume of complaints from both sides.
That's a very trite argument to say that all somebody has to do to demonstrate that they're not the benefit of any bias is to kick up.
I'm not clear I follow your question.
You
made the point that this was we had a cozy relationship. Maybe it does to you, and you're certainly entitled to your opinion. Life is far from cozy here, I can tell you. And we do not indulge ourselves in cozy relationships with interest groups.
Nevertheless, people such as Gemma O'Doherty do not get the benefit of the level of publicity.
Mm-hmm. I think we've already dealt with that.
Who don't seem to justify
it. Yeah, I think we've already dealt with that, William.
Okay. What is the future for RTE News and Current Affairs, do you think, Donal?
I think it's a very strong future. I think our audience figures suggest that we have a credibility, that we are capable of the kind of impartiality and objectivity that people expect and require. I think it's a service that strives quietly, and we don't publicly boast about the decision-making process or the lengths to which we go to prove facts. But the fact that we are so seldom proven wrong in anything, and indeed when we are proven wrong in something, we correct it quickly. But the fact that we are so seldom proven wrong, I think, speaks for itself.
Donal Byrne, the head of planning at RT News, also a news editor, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Make your view heard. Dial 076 603 5060 and leave a contribution for the show. You can find tips on how to record a good contribution and other ways to contact the podcast at hereshow.ie/call.
That's almost the end of episode 41 of Here's How, Ireland's political, social and current affairs podcast, published on the 29th of June 2016. I have extensive show notes for this episode on the website, including links showing how RTE blacked out and underreported many aspects of the Gemma O'Doherty story that were reported in the international press, of how RTE are in breach of BAI rules in the way that they deal with the AA, and how their crime reporting is widely seen as overly sympathetic to a Garda agenda. If you can think of a topic that you think should be covered in a future show, or if you want to suggest someone to include, and that could be yourself, then let me know. If you like the podcast, please go on iTunes and give it a rating or even write a nice review. Also, please like the show on Facebook. Please follow the podcast on Twitter at Here's How Podcast, and subscribe to the podcast so new shows automatically come up in your podcast feed. You can use iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or any other podcast app or software. If you don't know how to do that, then there's step-by-step instructions along with contact details at www.hereshow.ie. The next show will be uploaded shortly. The Here's How podcast is produced and presented by me, William Campbell. Thank you for listening.
William, that was excellent. I see exactly now why you want to recommend that particular episode. So remind us again, what's the best way to get your podcasts and what's the links?
Let's make sure we repeat it enough times. If you go to hereshow.ie, you'll find a link for any of them. But if you're in your podcast app, just search Here's How Ireland and it'll come up.
Excellent. William, very many thanks for that, and thoroughly enjoyed listening to it.